Inside Mac.
Welcome to the Inside Mac Radio Program. We take a lighthearted look at all things Macintosh. We have a great show lined up for everybody today. The Inside Mac Radio Program is brought to you by Micromat, makers of TechTool Pro 4, the preferred disk and system utility for Mac OS X. You can check them out at micromat.com. DVD XDV, if you've created some cool content, it's on a DVD, you want to pull it back off, reutilize it, put it into another piece of software, Final Cut Express, Final Cut Pro, iMovie, you name it. No problem. Check it out. DVDXDV.com. MCE Technologies, the place to get a brand new MacBook, MacBook Pro, and iPod upgrades for your SuperDrive, for your G4, your G3, you name it. These cats got it happening. MCETech.com. And our media partners, a popular photography and imaging magazine at popphoto.com. American Photo Magazine at popphoto.com. The guys over at Creative Pro, the place for creative professionals over at creativepro.com. Mac Update, the place for Macintosh software updates at macupdate.com. The official printers of the Inside Mac Radio Program at printingforless.com. And the digital production buzz of Philip Hodges, Thursday evening, 6 to 7 p.m. on the web at digitalproductionbuzz.com. You're joined today by myself, Scott Shepard, and Brad Wright. How you doing, Brad?
Hey, doing great, Scott.
We have a very cool show lineup for everybody today.
Yeah, cool stuff.
We have our normal cats. We have Philip coming on here this hour doing his weekly digital post-production news. Andy Shallot with his Mac design out of the box tip. We're going to have little Sammy Levin doing the cool Mac pick of the week. We have Rick Trezzoli on. He is a Guitar Center masterclass musician, author. He's done a ton of stuff. His specialty is 5.1 surround sound. He does a lot of work with movie people, pictures in New York City. So we're going to have Rick on talking about Pro Tools and surround sound mixing and what he uses his Mac for. And, you know, just cool stuff to chat to see what these guys are doing with this 5.1 surround sound for television and movie work.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty cool stuff there. We're going to have James Wiebe on from Wiebe Tech talking about storage technologies and what's going on with SATA and the stuff they use with forensic stuff to pull stuff off of hard drives without touching the data and stuff for, you know, the police and the FBI.
We're talking
a little bit about hard drive forensics.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool stuff there. We're going to have the guys on from Google talking about Google Earth.
Ah, yes. The company that's out to dominate the world, Google.
That's right.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Yes, we got the guys coming on from Google talking about the product manager, actually, for Google Earth.
Yeah.
Talking about how cool that is and what all that works in and how it works up with the Mac stuff and, you know, all kinds of cool things. We're going to go over some news and just other stories here in the week with the Lando Mac. What's Brad been up to this
week?
Oh, not much.
I was out in Reno for a couple of days, enjoying the nice dry weather. Yeah, you know, not too bad. It was great up there. It was kind of vacant. I was surprised. I think $3 gas is preventing everyone from going anywhere on 4th of July or any holiday, really. I was surprised how, like, dead it was. I've been going up there several years, but there was really nobody there up in Reno. I was surprised.
It
was vacant. Everybody, there was just specials all over the place. Discounts everywhere.
Oh, well, no one wants to drive it. $3.25 a gallon out here.
Yeah, just
it's amazing.
Stay home.
Such a difference in price. I mean, I was in Memphis a few weeks back.
Yeah.
Or a week ago, actually. And, you know, gas is $2.70, $2.65.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you come here to California, it's 330.
We need a pipeline, just a long, maybe a garden hose. Just pump all the
gas from Memphis back over to the
other side.
They make gas right here in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Right over here in Richmond. They refine it. They make it all yummy, and they don't have to truck it except, you know, a half hour.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
If that.
Yeah.
And it's $3.25, $3.30, $3.40 a gallon.
Yeah.
In Memphis, they have to make it in the Gulf of Mexico, Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
And ship it all the way up four or five states later.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost a buck a gallon cheaper.
See, we pay the price by being close to the refinery. There you go. We're just losing by being so close. We have to live further away from the refining process. I think there's a big pipeline that parks it in the Gulf, and it goes all the way up the United States. Gigantic pipeline goes across multiple states. So they
really
make it the spigot of the pipeline, yeah.
I don't know, man. I think they truck it.
Yeah, gas is bad.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? Yeah, get a hybrid. There you go. Electric car. Run it with a, you know, Mac OS X.
Cool. Yeah, there you go.
Hey, you're listening to the Inside Mac Radio Program. Next up here, we're going to have Philip Hodges talking about all the digital production, post-production, distribution news of the week. You're here with Scott Shepard and Brad Wright. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to unleash the power of DVD? With DVD XDV, the power is within your grasp. DVD XDV converts your DVDs into broadcast quality video. Video clips from DVD XDV are ready to use in iMovie, iDVD, or Final Cut Pro. To learn more, visit DVDXDV.com. Informal.
Informative.
In front of the industry. Inside Mac is on. Call Scott now at 800-490-0058 or email us at radio@insidemac.com. Inside Mac.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac radio program. This part of the Inside Mac radio show brought to you by Micromat, makers of TechTool Pro 4, the preferred disk and system utility for Mac OS X. Now, Universal Binary Beta out. So you can check that out at micromat.com. Right now, we're here with Philip Hodges, the digital production buzzmeister, with all the cool news of the week in the Land O' Post. How are we doing, Philip?
Terrific. Scott, how are you?
Good, buddy. What's going on?
Well, we caused a little bit of a storm in the blogosphere with our comments last week about how much production values actually counted.
We did. I saw that we did start a little bit of uprising and stir going on there.
not everybody agreed production values were important, but there was a modicum of intelligent conversation in there. Where?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, production values are important, and people are used to watching highly produced television, and I mean, that's a standard to set. And if you're not going to hold to the standard, I guess, you know. I don't know. I don't want to watch something that's all nasty. Like you said, volumes jumping up around. I don't know.
And if the content is important enough, we'll put up with bad production values. But if there's a choice between the same type of content or equivalent content with good production values, I think that's going to trump content with bad production values every time.
Yeah, well, like you said, if it's a certain thing and it's got bad production values, well, you'll deal with it. If it's something that you can't find anywhere else that's just really cool.
Yep.
But if it's just mediocre content, well, sorry, brother. Goodbye.
Yeah, that would change the channel.
Yeah, that would be like Rocket Boom without Amanda Condon.
Yeah, that's a big story of the week. You know, they had a big breakup. Rocket Boom's done.
Really?
Yeah, well, I reckon, yeah.
Yeah, oh, Amanda, no. They had a big breakup between Amanda and her partner, and it's on her website, and then she's got a big deal. Now they're airing dirty laundry.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's terrible. Crazy. She was fantastic. I mean, she wrote that show. She wrote a lot of the stuff for that show. She's very smart. Boy, she's going to be missed. I hope she starts her own thing because I tune in her in again.
Oh,
she's
check this out. One of the responses on her website was the guy that owns Weblogs. Or he doesn't own it, but he's the CEO of Weblogs and owns Netscape.
Yeah.
The whole Weblogs company, you know, the monster billion-dollar deal.
Uh-huh.
Offers her a fat job, a monster studio. I mean, carte blanche, dude. Come work for me. It doesn't matter what you want. You got anything you need.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people don't realize how smart she is. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, she's a dumb blonde or something like that. But she is actually, like, she's very, very smart. Look at her website. Look at her profile. You'll see that she's sharp.
And just in case anybody doesn't know, because I believe there are people who don't know about Rocket Boom, was the poster child for video blogging. This is, you know, the first wave of the new order, et cetera, et cetera. 250,000 downloads per daily video show. Report was from between 40,000 a day to 80,000 a week for advertising revenue. The first ad that they auctioned off on eBay bought them $40,000 for one 30-second ad. These people were really, you know, riding the wave of what the future of video might look like or video distribution might look like, and it's sort of come crashing down on the rocks all of a nasty sudden.
Well, I'm sure the guy from Rocket Boom that owns 51% of the company will, you know, find another host and continue forward, and I'm sure Amanda will do something that's probably her style and flair, and, you know.
Yeah, I think both of them are pretty talented, and I just really liked their artsy look of a lot of the stuff they found. I mean, it was really well done. It's going to be sorely missed. Hopefully they'll find another host. I mean, I'd like to see both of them be successful because they're both good entities.
Indeed. And one of the things that's been successful, incredibly successful, is Flash. Adobe have released Flash Player 9, and initially it seemed like they weren't doing an Intel binary version, a universal binary version for Intel, and I was disappointed. But it turns out there is actually a universal binary version available, but it's in beta. So you can grab that, or you can stick with version 8, version 9 PowerPC and force, say, Safari to go into Rosetta mode so that it will use the PowerPC, but you'll get a slower performance.
Now, QuickTime, I believe, will play up to Flash 5. So if you are making Flash content, stick with Flash 5 export, and I think it'll give you the same kind of speed.
Yeah, but Flash 5 is pretty weak, where Flash is at. I mean, you know, Flash 8 was where Flash finally became a useful format for video with a halfway decent code.
Right. If you're talking video, yeah. But if you're just talking Flash in general animation and whatnot, Flash 5 can. You're just doing web page animation and things.
Yeah. Interesting adjustments in this one. They actually changed it to a new virtual machine, which is a just-in-time compiler. that Richard performs a whole lot better, a whole lot faster. I hope, like, a whole lot more efficiently would be nice, too, because it was a bit of a processor hog.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if you got some bad video, speaking of bad video, if you got some bad video that you need to repair and make it look halfway decent, jump on over to CHV, their repair collection, a new set of plugins for Final Cut Pro, will eliminate noise, remove dust and scratches, repair any kind of dropout, and conquer dead pixels of digital cameras for just $99.
Wow. So you can have bad production values and then just fix it with this plugin.
Well, it's technical issues, not production value issues. I don't think it's going to relight it for you or make the sound better.
Nice, you know.
Yep. And because they're FX plug format, they will work in any version of Final Cut Pro PowerPC or Intel or back to Final Cut Pro 1 if you're still running that somewhere. And another important step is the glue tools. They've got a set of DPX and Cineon QuickTime components that let you read these high-level, bit depth file formats that are used in film digital intermediate work. Not for everybody, not something that Uncle Joe would need to use for his weekend home video, but it's very useful if you're working in digital intermediate workflows where you actually want to open up a DPX or a Cineon log file and convert it to something you can work with in Adobe After Effects or in Final Cut Pro. And it's only $29, and they're available for Universal Binary or Intel Macs. Isn't that great?
That seems just too cheap for people that are doing film. It should be $29,000.
Exactly. Yes, but, you know, people might just be doing a small part of the film. You know, might just do a title sequence, and that guy might be working in, you know, his small home office studio and just doing some great work on a G5 quad or something.
Yeah, I mean, with digital workflows, you just never know where your movie where movies are actually finished. I mean, they can be sent all around the world or to wherever, and actually effect shots and whatnot can just travel anywhere now.
On the internet, nobody knows you're working in your PJs.
Oh, yes. Yep.
And Cantel have released version 7 of Cumulus, their digital asset management tool, which is one of the standby tools, one of the long-standing tools for digital asset management. And you can run that on Mac OS X, Windows, and you can run the servers because you can have workgroup and enterprise-level products on Linux and Solaris if you so desire. It's a pretty cool digital asset management, and as we go to non-tape workflows, digital asset management becomes even more important.
Yeah.
And they've rebuilt it. It was a Carbon app, but the version 7 is actually a full Cocoa app. So that's nice, a nice little bit of extra.
Yeah, because, I mean, really, by moving to Cocoa, they can take advantage of course, universal binaries going forward and also optimization.
Indeed.
It's a lot easier.
Indeed.
It's nice.
And optimization is what they're about. And they've got great actions, which can automate workflows. So as soon as your database changes, you could update your PDF sheets or proof sheets, or you could send an email to everybody in the workgroup and say, hey, there's a new piece of media or other things like that. And there's a web client, so you don't even have to have the actual app. Application. You can work from a browser and have the same features as the application if you're running the appropriate version.
How fun. Hey, Philip, thank you so much for that. You can find out everything about Philip's program at digitalproductionbuzz.com. This is Thursday evening, 6 to 7 p.m. on the web. Live chat, very cool gig. Check it out, and the podcast also over at iTunes, but go over to digitalproductionbuzz.com. Next up here, we're going to have Andy Shallett with a Mac Design Out of the Box Tip of the Week. We'll be right back.
Good morning, my good fellow. Welcome to Smith's Computer and Robot Repair. How may I be of service?
Yes, my Mac has crashed. Big time. I was about to save the annual report when...
Whenever my systems are not operating correctly, Tech Tool will always find the problem.
Excuse me.
Quiet, you platinum-plated nincompoop.
I'm sorry. You were saying? Anyway, my Mac totally crashed, and if I don't get this data back, my boss is gonna freak.
If it were not for Tech Tool Pro, my memory banks would have been lost in...
Silence, you motorized monstrosity.
It is not necessary that I stay here and be insulted.
Wait, robot, don't go. Are you telling me this Tech Tool Pro software can save me a trip to the repair shop?
Affirmative. I kid you not.
Don't listen to him, sir. No software product can match the technical skill and computer savvy of Smith's Computer and Robot Repair.
Baloney. That does not compute.
So, robot, where can I get this Tech Tool Pro?
From Micromat in Windsor, California.
Excellent. Thanks for the info.
You are welcome.
Find out more about Tech Tool Pro by visiting Micromat.com.
I need a vacation.
coast to coast and around the world, Scott Shepard is Inside Mac.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac radio program. This part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by DVD XDV. If you've got some cool content that's on a DVD, you want to pull it off and reuse it, stick it into iMovie, Final Cut Pro, Final Cut Express, Motion, you name it, Shake, you name it, you can do it with DVD XDV. You can check them out at DVDXDV.com. Right now we're here with Andrew Shallett. He is the author of the Mac Design Out of the Box cool book about tips for doing great design on your Mac. Andy, how you doing?
Great, great, Scott. How are you?
Good. So what's happening, buddy, in the world of graphic design on the Macintosh this week?
Well, that's an interesting question, actually. I've been tooling around the web, looking at some sites and going over some sites that are familiar with me. And a lot of times people are using Flash for their sites nowadays or Flash intros. And I'd like to get your opinion on this. I have a sort of a pet peeve about this. Whenever you see Flash intro, do you ever watch the whole thing, or do you just hit skip intro?
Oh, I always skip the intro. Come on, I mean, that's a waste of time. That's just
thank
so nice.
I always love it when you get to a page and it's like you can't do anything. It's just sitting there loading.
and what you get is an intro sometimes. You don't even get to the page that you want.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to innovativescrewdrivers.com or something, and I don't know if that actually exists, but and I want to get to see what's the latest in the screwdrivers, I have to wait for their intro and their personalized commercial before I get on. So as a designer, I want to say, maybe as a shout out to all those designers out there, I want to say, let's not do that anymore. I think that the technology is at a point where we don't need the intro to load and then the page to load after that. Because originally we used to do those intros and those little commercials before the site as a sort of a sleight of hand, because sometimes you have a lot of content and you're trying to load your whole page in behind this thing, and so you're trying to distract the people with this intro, and then it loads behind. I don't think it's necessary anymore. I think that we've got content down to just fast loading. We've got a lot of people at broadband. I really think that it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
You know, and so I guess I'm just using my 5 minutes this week to complain.
Well, you know, there's a lot of, like, really slicky sites that they just sit there and they, like, give you this, you know, whoosh, kind of swooshy opening and
well,
all of this stuff.
If it's Nike, that's fine, because
yeah.
They can afford the pros to make a great commercial.
But like they
I
should
say,
never...
if it's some screwdriver company, you really don't need to know, you know, some uncle owns the company, and so the kid's doing graphic design, he's going to do his commercial for his uncle.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a great way to stretch your wings as a designer, but you always, and it comes back to my basic principle that you always have to think about who is watching your site, who is the viewer, and what is the audience, and what do they want to do? Do they want to watch your commercial, or do they just want to buy the product, which in the end pays for that site too? So maybe I'm just an old fart, but that's the way things are.
Now, here's a question for you. And we talked about this a little earlier in another segment with Philip Hodges. If you were going to design stuff, what version of Flash would you put on a website? Would you go right to Flash 9, use all the cool new cool guy alpha channels and all the great embedded stuff? Or would you stick back with the old nasty Flash 5 stuff?
Okay, well, actually, what you want to do is you want to make it accessible to as many people as possible. So I'd be using Flash MX. The highest version of Flash to make the thing, but I want to make my compatibility 6. Usually, you don't want to go for the slowest one. You go for the one up, and you give a button if they need it, because you do want to push people a little bit further along. You know, you don't want to get stuck with. You don't want them to be sitting there complacent. You do. It is interactive, which means they have to do something too. So you want to push them a little further forward, but I would suggest not necessarily the one with the latest, greatest. You shouldn't be using the latest, greatest anyway unless it's necessary, unless that's what you're selling. What you want is your message is most important. And so really what you have to do is you have to make the thing get to the point really quick. What I haven't done today. But I'm trying.
Andy, how do we get more information on the book? What's going on with Andrew Shallett?
Okay, check out Shallett.com or Shallett'sweb.com. And check out Inside Mac Radio as well.
Cool. Hey, there you go. That was Andy Shallett, author of The Mac Design Out of the Box. Very cool book. Check it out at Shallett.com. You're listening to the Inside Mac Radio program. Next up, cool Mac goodies. We'll be right back.
Dr. Mann Consulting is a new service that offers troubleshooting, training, advice, and technical support to Mac users. Our expert technicians will resolve your Mac problems quickly, painlessly, and inexpensively. We guarantee it. To find out more, visit www.boblevitis.com or give us a call at 408-627-7577. My name is Bob, Dr. Mac Levitis, and I approve, wrote, and produced this message.
Momentum for your Macintosh. Scott Shepard is Inside Mac.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac radio program. This part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by MCE Technologies. You want a brand new MacBook, MacBook Pro, a new iPod, upgrades for your MacBook, MacBook Pro, you name it. Super drives for PowerBooks, G3s, G5s. These cats got everything RAM. They're smoking. Check them out at MCE Tech. That's MCETech.com. Right now we're here with Sam Levin. He's got his cool Mac picks for the week. How you doing, Sammy?
Oh, man, it's great. Much more iPod stuff. As, of course, it only gets bigger and better. Our friends at Marware have come out with a whole new line of iPod cases. Really not new, but new to me, that is. There's Sports Suit, there's Sidewinder. I really like the Sidewinder case that they came out with, Scott. It's completely protected. It's got a screen protector. It's a hard-shelled case. It comes in black and white. And what's really cool about it, it's got a kickstand and, like, a pull-out drawer for your headphones. So you could wrap your headphones around this little drawer, and then when it's not in use, you push it back in. It's a retractable headphone drawer. And it's inexpensive. It's $29, $29.95 from Marware, our good friends. And, of course, Marware has been around since the Newton days. So these guys have been making portable products for a long time. Of course, they make a whole other line, a number of different things for the iPod. Just check them out at Marware. That's MARWARE.com. Also, our friends at Omni come out with a very cool product called Omni Dazzle. You know, everyone knows Omni Graffle, right? And they've been a Mac developer for a long time. They're called Omni Group, actually. They've come out with a product called Omni Dazzle. And what it allows you to do, Scott, is draw on the screen with special effects. So if you're giving a presentation and you want to call out screenshots, you can draw on the screen. It will evoke different things like pixie dust, flashlight, cutout, sonar, what else, focal points, scribble, bullseye, waves, comic, like Batman, Zap, Pop, all that stuff. It's really cool. It definitely stands out. Of all the utilities I've used in the last few years, this is it. It's $14.95. It's a download from Omni Group. It's called Omni Dazzle. I highly recommend it. If you're giving any kind of presentation, this will give that presentation an extra pop. And lastly, the folks at Spec Products have come out with a new iPod speaker. Now, I don't have it yet, but it was just announced and just shipped. It's called Spectone Retro. Have you seen this yet, Scott?
Nope.
It looks like a retro speaker for the iPod, and it comes in all these funky colors. It's pretty cool. From what I could tell, it's a big mono speaker, and it's got a round knob in the middle, and it's inexpensive. It's $149.95. So we're waiting to get that, and hopefully we can play around with that in the next couple weeks. But those guys at Spec have come out with a number of new things as well: nano cases, mobile tune FM transmitter, and a new iPod Canvas sport case, which has got like tennis shoe fabric around the case, kind of like Converse shoes. That's what it looks like. So we're waiting to get all that stuff in-house so we can play around with it. But I dig those cats. They're pretty cool. But that's it from me. There's a lot more stuff coming up in the next few weeks. When we get our hands on it, we'll be able to give you more insight to that. And also, of course, we're waiting for Griffin's TuneView, or Tune Center, that is, to come out with their AV dock solution for the iPod. So that should happen in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's what we're all waiting for, is a dock with Ethernet or Wi-Fi.
It's both, Ethernet and Wi-Fi,
and
it will tell you on-screen controls.
That's it. Yeah, that's the one. That's fantastic.
We'll have it in probably the next 3 weeks.
Cool stuff. Hey, Sammy, thank you so much. That was Sam Levin with his cool Mac picks for the week. You're listening to the Inside Mac. radio program. Next up here, we're going to talk about 5.1 surround sound on your Mac. We'll be right back.
Creative Planet Communities present the Digital Production Buzz.
What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening.
Production, post-production, distribution. What's really happening now and in your digital future? The Digital Production Buzz, live Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific. Archives and podcast immediately after.
Macintosh for the new millennium.
This is Inside Mac.
Inside Mac.
Get on live now at 800-490-0058 or email us
at radio@insidemac.com.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac radio program. This part of the Inside Mac radio show brought to you by Popular Photography and Imaging Magazine, the place to get all the news, information, tips, tricks, everything you need for digital imaging. You can check them out at Pop Photo. That's P-O-P-P-H-O-T-O, popphoto.com. Right now we're here with Rich Tozzoli.
What's up?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Doing great out here. The East Coast is hot, but good.
It is good. Now, give us a little background on you, Rich. You do a lot of stuff. You're working right now on a 5.1 high-definition TV mix for the Cincinnati Pops for PBS. Give us a little background on Rich.
Okay. Well, I've been using Macs since the LC, the old 32-bit bomber. Pretty much I started out as a guitar player, and then, believe it or not, I was a banker. I was a commercial loan officer after going to college for marketing and management, and then I jumped back full-time into the music business many years ago and just discovered that surround sound was my calling and have mixed, you know, anywhere from 30 to 40 DVDs, TV shows, anything like that, upward. I've been blessed to work with a lot of the people that I grew up playing their music in high school, which is really neat.
Now, what is your sort of gear that you have in your studio?
Okay, it's all centered around the Mac, obviously, and I have a dual 2.5 G5 with, I think I have 4 gigs of RAM in this bad boy. I also work at a studio in New York called Gizmo, and they have the same exact setup. So it's really fundamentally, everything is based on Pro Tools inside the Mac, which spits out to an interface, which then spits out to a controller and or the speakers. 5.1 would be left, center, right, left surround, right surround, and the sub or LFE channel.
Now, what speakering system are you using to monitor those on?
I happen to use Genelex and NHT Pros.
What kind of Pro Tools rig are you using? You're using an HDXL? What are you guys using to actually do all this 5.1 stuff?
You got it. Pretty much anybody who's doing high-end surround mixing is going to be running an HDXL system, and that's exactly what we use because, you know, you can push these pretty hard. They respond quite nicely. And also, what's very interesting is I noticed a lot of studios have the new liquid-cooled versions right next to the mix position because a lot of times you have to be right next to the computer, and it's made a dramatic difference in noise.
Are you using a control surface for any of this stuff, or are you doing everything in software just right on the Mac?
Pretty much it's done all inside. I do mixes also externally, but generally not spread out across a big console. It's mostly in the box mixing, which I've been doing since before it was fashionable.
So you don't need to actually have a large control surface to do your mixing, like lots of levels and lots of channels and...
You can have it both ways. The Icon, I just started mixing on that, which is DigiDesign's large control surface. That's just a tremendous way to work. But generally speaking, it really works great to mix in the box and have any, you know, a fader bank of, say, 8 channels.
Oh, what I meant is that you, physically, are you just using the mouse to mix, or you actually have a control surface where you're...
A little bit of each. A lot of it's still done on the mouse. And believe it or not, you know, you gotta consider your carpal tunnel syndrome, to be honest with you. But a lot of it's really done in the combination of the mouse and the control surface, which can range, like I said, from an Icon down to a Command 8.
Wow, cool. So you even use the Command 8 stuff.
I do. It's a great little toy. In fact, in my home 5.1 studio, that's what I have. It's ergonomically laid out, so I just reach over to my right when I want to move any kind of faders, you know, because certain things are more emotional when you're moving faders.
Do you have to have, I've seen a lot of guys that are using mix stuff with Pro Tools on the Mac, they actually have like a joystick when they do the 5.1 surround stuff. Is that a different kind of aftermarket interface that that plugs into the HDXL system? Or, you know, we've seen this before. I don't know if it's a MIDI deal or what, but it's sort of a joystick where they can bounce sound around.
Well, joysticks can work a couple of ways. Some controllers have them, such as the high-end Icon setups. Other, it's an external joystick. Honestly, in the world of surround mixing, mostly for the world of HDTV mixing and or post, you don't use a lot of the joystick, because think about what happens when you're mixing in surround. Yes, when you're watching Star Wars, you want that ship to fly behind you up to the front of the screen, and that would be a cool pan. But generally speaking, the positioning is static, it's called, in surround mixing, which means everything has its position and rarely moves. Sometimes you do fly some things around, like in Ziggy Stardust Live with Tony Visconti, we flew one of the guitar solos around just to, you know, make an effect. But that's few and far between.
Wow. That's interesting stuff. Tell us about some of the stuff. You're working on a brand new gig right now for PBS.
Yeah, this is the Cincinnati Pops, and it's 64 channels wide, recorded by one of the big mobile trucks. And I just got all the files. I'm going in tomorrow morning. We put the mix up. We start next week. And it's great to mix to picture, because the action on screen follows what you're mixing musically. So this should be very interesting. I like doing television work because, it, you know, honestly, to be truthful, it pays well. And it's great work. It's comfortable. It's not like you're there till 4 a.m. I mean, obviously, if there's an emergency, you got to get it done. But it's just a professional way of working and kind of a respectful way.
So you're mixing 64 channels at what, 24-bit on just one Mac with what kind?
Yeah, here's how that works. You can, a couple ways to do that. You could use FireWire 800 drives, FW800, which I happen to use the LaCie heavy duty drives, but where I'm mixing tomorrow, they have a SAN, and they have a fiber channel card, which plugs into the back of the Mac, and it runs 2 gigabytes of throughput, which is Silas, I think, is the manufacturer. It's called a TeraBlock. It's very cool and very fast. And also, what's interesting is that the video is also digitized. So,
oh, right, because you actually have HD video. So you've got HD video and 64-channel audio coming through on that SAN.
Chicks dig it. It's good living, guys. It's good living. You know, somebody has to do this.
Yeah. Now, tell us about your book. You got a book out on Pro Tools surround sound mixing.
Yeah, that is on Backbeat Books. I wrote it last year, and, you know, some of the things have changed in the book, which is interesting about when you write a book. The day it's done, the next day technology has moved on, right? But from there, a lot of the principles, I decided to make the book about a lot of the principles of surround mixing and not necessarily directly focused on Pro Tools, even though it's called Pro Tools Surround Sound Mixing. It's great because it's, you know, I get reviews in Japanese and German, and, you know, it's doing very well, the book. I'm very happy.
That's cool stuff. Now, what is a bass setup if someone wanted to start doing surround sound with their Mac, and let's say they're using, can you do 5.1 with like Pro Tools LE or like an Inbox, or do you need to actually start off with an XL system?
That's a very, very constant question that I get. You sort of have to use an HD rig to do it on a higher level. However, you can use 6 outputs analog out of something like a 002 or something along those lines and run those 6 analog inputs into 6 speakers and do what's called stems or busing, which means you can actually create surround that way. And it's exciting because people that I teach how to do surround, they get all excited when you hear it, number one. And number two, it's another source of income. It's a way to differentiate your professionalism and yourself as far as, you know, what you can offer the world, because we know how tough it is to do what we want to do in making records these days, and just another way to move up.
Now, how would someone actually, now, if they're going to actually want to do a surround project, and let's say they have an interface like a 002 or a 002R
right,
that has, you know, 8 in and 8 out,
mm-hmm,
and then you can have the 6 out for the surround channels, do you need to record something in multiple or 6-channel input? Or if someone takes a stereo record, is there a way to take a 2-track stereo recording and turn this into like a 5.1 gig?
There is. That's called upmixing. I helped work on the Grammy committee. There is a Grammy available for surround mixing now.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I helped push that through with a lot of the you know, Elliot Shiner's The World and Phil Ramone's, and we pushed that through 2 years ago. That just started. Chuck Ainley won this year for Mark Knopfler's Dire Straits mix, which is fantastic. I'm getting around the point that you don't have to start recording with fancy microphones. Let's take a drum set, for example. What I tend to do is mic traditionally, meaning kick, snare, overheads, hi-hat, toms. But then what I do is I set up a quad array of good microphones, like good Omni microphones, around the kit, say 6 feet out and 6 feet apart, in the front and behind. And then I pan those to the quadrant that you would think they would go to, left front, right front, left front, right surround, and put the kit in the middle. And it's very exciting to listen to that way. Point is this is done without fancy microphones. Yes, they're good microphones, but not surround microphones.
Hey, Rich, we're coming to a break. Why don't you hold on? We'll come back here after the break. We're here talking about 5.1 surround, how to do this stuff. Rich is doing all the stuff on his Macintosh G5 with a Pro Tools HDXL, but you can do this with a Pro Tools, you know, LE. You can start doing surround sound mixing. He's got a great book out by Backbeat Books. You're listening to the Inside Mac Radio program. We'll be right back.
If you want to keep up with the world of Macintosh, there's only one place that will provide everything you need to know, and always first. MacMinute.com is a leading source for up-to-the-minute Mac news. Updated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, MacMinute has all the news and industry information weeks before the magazines. Why be the last to know when Mac news breaks? Visit MacMinute.com.
Coast to coast and around the world, Scott Shepherd is Inside Mac.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac Radio program. This part of the Inside Mac Radio show is brought to you by American Photo Magazine, American Photographer, the coolest high-end magazine on digital photography. You can check them out at AmericanPhoto.com. We're here with Rich Cizzoli. We're talking about surround sound mixing on your Macintosh. Now, Rich, we have a question for you here. We were talking during the break. Let's say I want to sort of put four mics together and sort of do like a quadrant type mix of what you were talking about. So I have, you know, more stuff to bring into my mix and just have a right and left stereo and try to split that up. What do I do if, you know, we can't afford, you know, match Neumann U87s to record this stuff? And let's say a guy wants to buy, you know, four of these $100 Chinese condenser microphones. Does this stuff have to be matched perfect as in pairs?
No.
Or can I just take sort of four mics that are the same brand, the same thing, and just set them around to get this surround mix?
Yeah, you can set them around. Some of those microphones are excellent. Some of those cheap Chinese mics sound really good, and you can use something like Audio-Technica's, you know, 4033, which is only a few $100. Any decent microphone, to be honest with you, that captures the sound can be used to create surround. Now, having said that, you don't have to use four microphones. A lot of the times, you can take, let's say it's a pair of stereo overheads, you can pan them to the left and right front speakers, and then use a high-end reverb, such as impulse response reverbs. Now, impulse response reverbs are actual impulses taken in acoustic spaces. Altaverb makes impulse response reverb, the Waves IR1. Some of these are the Waves IR360, which is a surround impulse response reverb. They're actually captured in acoustic spaces such as great studios and churches. You could place your microphones into that, all the way down to using, and I've showed people how to use Digiverb, which is a pretty cheap reverb. Put Digiverb into your left and right surround and send the drums into Digiverb and create a sense of acoustic space. Really what you wanted to get across in the world of surround is envelopment and ambience.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, so effectively you don't really need the inverted, the mic facing the exact opposite direction as the source to create that effect.
No, close your eyes, go in the room, listen to what sounds right, and then it is right. The rule in surround is that there are no rules. It's whatever is right and sounds right.
Rich, how do people get a hold of you? You also do stuff at Guitar Center. You're doing master class stuff with Guitar Center. Tell us that real quick. We got a couple minutes left of this segment.
Sure. I actually write for EQ and Pro Sound News and GC Pro online. And it's great because I tend to write from the real world point of view. I don't necessarily write about, you know, your typical review of a unit. If somebody's going to send something to me, I'm going to pound it through its paces out there and tell you what it's really like. My email is surroundpro@AOL.com, which is real easy.
That's cool.
Surroundpro, surroundpro@AOL. So, you know, a lot of people send me questions, and I'm always happy to help because, you know, you got to spread the word, got to spread the gospel.
That's it, the whole Mac deal, and it's great you're doing all the stuff on the Mac and you haven't drifted away and started using any heathen boxes. That's great.
I feel bad for the people that use those boxes.
Yeah, it is terrible.
It is.
Rich, hey, thanks for joining us today, buddy. That was great stuff. We're going to have you back on. We just, the whole thing, we could talk about this stuff for hours. It's cool stuff.
Yeah, it's scary.
It is. Thanks a lot, buddy.
All right, keep it up.
Great. Cool stuff there. He's got, like you said, he's doing this brand new gig right now for the Cincinnati Pops for PBS.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I thought you just needed, you know, this is a real eye-opener because I thought you needed just, you know, hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars of equipment to do good surround with mics and everything.
All you need is a MacBook, MacBook Pro, $450 or $499 for an inbox too, okay? That only give you two channels in, but, you know, you can tape stuff and record it separately and mix it. Let's say you buy a 002, so it costs you about a grand. So you got $1,000 worth of hardware. You can buy five of these Chinese mics from different manufacturers for $100 a piece that are copy like a Neumann. Dude, you can get into the surround sound deal for like 1,500 clams.
Wow.
Done.
Wow.
$3,000, that's including a Mac. So 3,000, you can start doing surround sound. But you need, you know, of course, Rich's book and some help. But
yeah,
it's pretty cool stuff. Hey, you're listening to the Inside Mac radio program. We got a great show lined up for you in the next hour. We got James Wiebe from Wiebe Tech, and we have the guys from Google talking about Google Earth. We'll be right back.
Do you want to find Macintosh software updates faster? Do you want to do this without paying a yearly fee or a site bogged down with tons of advertising? Do you want your software update site to offer you a free membership featuring custom watch lists, email update notifications, custom layouts, and more? Do you want to have the latest 15 Macintosh software updates streamed to your menu bar? Now, do you really want to know who this great website is for the best Macintosh software updates on the planet? It's MacUpdate.com. Check out MacUpdate. Visit www.macupdate.com.
You are Inside Mac.
Inside Mac Radio Program. We take a lighthearted look at all things Mac, and we've talked about all kinds of cool stuff today.
Oh, yeah, we have. We've done surround sound mixing, I think, and gotten into that big. And so how you don't even need a whole lot of gear to get started in this thing.
I don't know. How much you can do with the surround stuff with Soundtrack Pro. I've never even thought of looking at it that way, but maybe you can even do some of the stuff in Apple's applications.
Well, I know that I really like the Soundtrack Pro for doing effects and doing modifying sound to get whoosh and swoosh and things. And, oh, yeah, you could pan that but you might want to just create the effects tracks and then mix it all in real time in something else. That just depends. But Soundtrack Pro is becoming a really nice program. It just keeps improving and getting better.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool stuff, though. But, you know, like you said, you can get the whole Pro Tools gig for about five clams.
Yeah, well, Pro Tools is where the industry is at right now. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, that's where if you want to bill out and do post-production work, you got to know Pro Tools. You got to have a Pro Tools system.
Yeah, and it's not that hard to learn to get into the whole deal.
No.
You know, pick up an M-Box and
get going. I have an M-Audio 410, and you can get Pro Tools LE.
You
and
can
start with that, yeah.
And they just released a brand new version today, actually.
Yeah.
711CS something, a brand new version today for Pro Tools for the Mac. Pro Tools LE and Pro Tools for M-Powered.
Yeah,
for the,
and it's
M-Audio stuff.
Probably a universal binary, so you can get that.
Actually, it's a straight Intel-only build.
Oh, is it really?
It's not a universal binary. It's a separate build completely, but it's just for the Intel Mac.
Totally optimized for
it. Yeah, supposedly they're going to come out with a universal binary build here later in the summer, but right now it's a separate build just for Intel-based Macs. But I'm sure the thing cranks, you know, using the process power of a couple of those dual cores. And
oh, yeah.
You know, you add that up with a... an M-Box or a 002 or a 002R.
Yeah.
If people don't know, a 002 has a control surface built into it. So you have automated 100-millimeter, faders and all the stuff built into a 002.
Mm-hmm.
And the 002R is basically just the same interface, but it's a rack mount. But it gives you 8 in and a lot out, and you get SPDIF and digital and all this other cool stuff. So it's pretty fun stuff.
Yeah, it is nice.
Grab some cheap mics and make your own surround.
Get rolling, yeah.
If anything, you can pan, you know. Use them for your videos, and you can export your audio from Final Cut or even iMovie.
Yeah.
Do some cool pans.
Uh-huh.
Having the cars run through from one channel to the next, you know, sort of like the Days of Thunder gig.
Yep.
Yeah?
Yep.
Well, cool
with DVD Studio Pro, I mean, you can go and directly encode all of your audio channels into AC3, and or even, I think it even supports DTS as well.
Yeah, and it does 5.1 surround and DVD Studio Pro.
Yeah.
So, yeah. A couple cool things from Digi, and add that stuff in with your... Final Cut Studio, and you're rocking.
That is it. Yep. Very cool.
And it just shows you there's another example. There are people that are doing all this cool high-end stuff on the Mac.
Yeah, and it really is becoming to that point where almost all the audio, there's no, used to be rack amounts of gear and all kinds of stuff going on, but all of it's now just kind of integrated straight into the workstation itself.
Well, yeah, I mean, look at one of the guests we had on Inside Mac earlier in the year, might have even been last year, but he did all of the sound editing for March of the Penguins in his bedroom. On a PowerBook and an M-Box.
Yeah.
He had $500 worth of gear, and he did all the sound mixing for March of the Penguins that was nominated for Academy Award.
I think it did almost $100 million, you know, domestic and DVD, I think, is the release. It was huge.
Think about it, you know, and he did all that stuff in a power book in his bedroom.
Yeah.
So, well, how much gear did he have? You know?
That's it.
It'll go into a paper bag and just stick in your backpack with your power book, and you're rocking. You got a full-blown studio.
Yeah.
That, you know, like you said, years ago would cost you $100,000 worth of gear.
Yeah, you couldn't even get into the market. It was just a very, very exclusive club.
Yeah. So that's cool stuff. So also, we're going to have the guys off from Google here talking about Google Earth. That is just a really, really cool piece of, you know, it's a cool product.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can spend hours and hours on it. It's great stuff.
Oh, yeah. So cool stuff there. You're listening to the Inside Mac radio program. Next up here, we're going to have James Wiebe on from Wiebe Tech, and we're going to talk about hard drives, SATA, forensic stuff. Let's say if you're doing stuff, if you're with a piece of law enforcement agency and you need to inspect the contents of a hard drive without modifying or touching it, hey, man, this is the stuff you need. You're listening to the Inside Mac radio program. We'll be right back.
Thanks so much for listening to Inside Mac Radio. Isn't this great? Hey, it's David Lawrence, and I'd love if you would listen to my podcasts as well. I've got two of them. One is a podcast for my countdown show, the Net Music Countdown. You can get it at feeds.feedburner.com/NMC. And then I have a second one for those of you that listen to online tonight or the David Lawrence show. We've got the nightly podcast, and that you can pick up at feeds.feedburner.com/PN. So there's two of them for you. And now, back to more of Inside Mac Radio.
Macintosh for the new millennium.
This is Inside Mac.
Inside Mac.
Get on live now
at 800-490-0058.
Or email us
at radio@insidemac.com.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac radio program. This part of the Inside Mac show is brought to you by Creator Pro. If you're a creative professional and want all the great place to get tips, tricks, information, questions answered, this is a place to go. You can check them out at creativepro.com. Right now we're here with James Wiebe. He is the CEO of Wiebe Tech. How you doing, James?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
Excellent. So give our listeners a little background on what is Wiebe Tech and what do you guys do?
Oh my gosh, that's a big question. Wiebe Tech, we've been in business now for about 6 years, and we got ourselves into the storage market. We do all kinds of storage devices for the marketplace, and we've got a couple niches that we participate in that are really cool. One of our coolest niches that we do is we make and sell forensic drive acquisition tools, hardware, and we sell it mostly to the U.S. government. That stuff's write blocked, which means you can read data from the drive, but you can't write it back.
So I guess this is used by like the FBI and the CIA and all these kind of black ops guys with the helicopters.
What if we told you it had to kill you?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, they send the helicopters by our office all the time.
Yeah. So this is something that people can actually, if they're doing investigation work into criminal cases or whatever, they can actually take hard drives out of people's computers.
Well, yeah, it's used in criminal cases, and it also has some civilian applications as well. When a police officer or an investigator goes to a crime site that involves computers, which can be anything from, you know, financial fraud to child pornography, whatever, when they go into that site, they want to be able to get information out of a hard drive and take it back to a lab for a forensic investigation. In order to do that, they'll remove the hard drive from the computer or from the notebook computer, just depends what kind it is, attach it to one of these forensic docks, and then proceed to read the contents and make a copy of it. When they do that, they'll do what's called create a hash for it, which you may be familiar with, which just means that they can prove that what they have a copy of is the same as the original, and then they can start doing their analysis after they've extracted the data. But it has another really cool application as well. And that is that you can use write block devices to prevent viruses from being written to the hard drive. I know that's not a Mac problem, but a lot of our PC customers run into it. And with that, you can prevent that from happening. Another application is you can take these write block devices, and occasionally a drive that won't work, after you've hooked it up to a write block device, the drive will work. And the reason is weird, but it makes sense. And that is because when the operating system turns on, it may go out and try and write something to to the drive. For instance, it's journaled. When it comes back and does that, because it's write-blocked, we don't give an error. If the drive will still read okay, you can get the information off of the hard drive. So it's a weird little data recovery tool as well.
Very interesting. So give us a little background. Let's talk about all this new stuff, this big buzzword going around, the SATA stuff, the serial ATA interface for hard drives.
You bet. SATA. We've been watching the market move to SATA drives now over the course of the last 1.5 or 2 years. Of course, the desktop Macs have been using SATA drives probably before any other computer manufacturer hit the marketplace. And the evolution from that is not only are the drives SATA, we're seeing more and more that we're selling storage enclosures that have SATA interfaces as well. And what that means is you get a pure native SATA connection directly from the computer over to the drive. By contrast, if you compare that to FireWire or USB, let's just pick on FireWire. You connect a FireWire drive to a computer. The computer, in order to talk to the drive, has to talk through its local interface to the FireWire port, through the FireWire cable, to a FireWire bridge. The FireWire bridge has to reconvert everything to IDE or SATA, and that's the way you get communication done. In the world of SATA, the interface is pure in the sense that there's no bridge inside the enclosure. It doesn't have to be, so that the computer can talk to the drive much more rapidly. As a result, things just work quicker, things tend to be a little bit more reliable, and also things tend to be a little bit less expensive.
Yeah, now you guys have a bunch of different interfaces and interface options for SATA, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We sure do.
Tell us, how's the world of SCSI? Is SCSI still alive at all? Are people still buying or using SCSI drives, or is everything now just FireWire, USB, and the new SATA stuff?
Well, there was a period of time there where I thought we had successfully buried SCSI. I really did. WebiTech is, up until fairly recently, didn't have a single thing to do with SCSI whatsoever. All I remember is the horrors of SCSI connections from years ago with, you know, selecting 0 through 7 or 1 through 7, whatever, trying to make the thing work and just hoping that the voodoo was correct so that the SCSI drive would work.
Oh, I remember those days.
It
was frightening.
Yeah. And stacks of enclosures that you connected together, and then one morning when you turn it on, everything works, and the next morning when you turn it on, things don't work.
Oh, yeah. You had a good feeling when all your drives came alive.
Yeah, that's just, right.
Yes.
Yeah. But seriously, I had done everything in my power to avoid having anything whatsoever to do with SCSI, because our mantra over here at WebiTech is really to do simple things that don't require drivers and are easy to use and are just plug and play and they work. That's what we've wanted to do. Well, once again, the forensic market, the government market, pushed us back into the SCSI sector, because they wanted to have a product that would allow them to read SCSI drives, and we do make that product. It's a SCSI to FireWire adapter. It's really strange. Hardly anyone knows that such a product exists, but we have one. And looking forward, a little bit of a preview for you and your listeners is we're planning to introduce some Ultra SCSI peripherals here in the not-too-distant future, which means these days Ultra SCSI is reliable. It's like 4 times or 5 times faster than FireWire 800. It doesn't have any of that voodoo that SCSI used to require. And on top of it, it's just screaming fast, by far fast enough to support uncompressed high-definition editing, which a lot of customers want to do. It's easier to expand in terms of volume sizes. And we think it's going to make a great big splash in the marketplace.
So SCSI still is backhauls everything through one cable. So effectively, like with SATA, I might have to have 4 or 5, you know, cable for each drive, unless I have a port multiplier or something. But this would backhaul everything through one cable. And then I guess I'm assuming that this would not require me to do device IDs on each drive?
That's a good question. I'm not the product manager on that particular thing. I don't believe you have to do a device ID. If you do, you set it up through a IP protocol. Really easy to do. And unlike SATA, where you have all those cables streaming all over the place, just like FireWire, you can daisy chain it, make it work real easily. Supports up to 16 volumes on a daisy chain. Just works great.
Wow. Interesting. Hey, James, we got about 40 seconds left in the segment. If you can stay with us for the next one, I'd like to talk about FireWire and sort of things that you need to be cautioned about when you're doing FireWire, hooking up, unplugging connections, because you did a white paper on this a while back ago.
Oh, my gosh.
But there's a lot of problems you could actually create for yourself if you don't treat the FireWire deal correctly. So if you can hold with us, that'd be great. You're here with James Wiebe, the CEO of Wiebe Tech. You can check out their great website at wiebetech.com. That's wiebetech.com. You're listening to the Inside Mac radio program. We'll be right back.
Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California is home to the world's largest collection of computer-related artifacts, including rare and one-of-a-kind objects such as the Apple I, the 20th anniversary Mac, and the Palm Pilot prototype. For tours and events or more information, please visit www.computerhistory.org or call 650-810-1010.
Inside your life,
business,
your home,
inside
your world. This is Inside Mac with Scott Shepard.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac radio program. This part of the Inside Mac radio show is brought to you by Mac Update. If you want to find the coolest place to get software updates for your Macintosh, go on over to MacUpdate.com. We're here with James Wiebe, the CEO of Wiebe Tech, and we've been talking about all kinds of cool stuff for storage solutions for your Mac. We've been talking about SATA, SCSI, Ultra SCSI, FireWire to SCSI, forensic stuff with the government, the man, the black helicopters. But now we want to talk about FireWire on your Mac. Now, James, you did a white paper a while back about best practices for using FireWire on your Mac. And I know there's a lot of ways of leaving cables plugged into the Mac, FireWire bus, not unplugging stuff. Tell us about all this FireWire stuff.
Okay. We're talking about FireWire failures and how to screw things up and how to do it right. Correct?
There you go. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, that paper was actually first published back in 2003, and I bet it's been downloaded tens of thousands of times. Basically, some of the things that people have done, they've done with FireWire 400, FireWire 800 is a lot more friendly. FireWire 400 to this day remains unfriendly in terms of the connectors, in that it's easy just to plug things in wrong. One of the things that I found it hard to believe is that people could actually plug in a 400 connector backwards. It was like, there's no way. Yeah, you've done it, right?
We always can build a better idiot.
I know,
it's idiot-proof, but we'll build a better idiot.
And it's like a day or two after having that thought, someone came up to me and proved that they had accidentally hooked in a FireWire 400 port with the connector backwards. And as a result, flames and smoke, all kinds of bad stuff happens. But that's one of the most obvious. Another thing that was a problem, and I think this has largely been resolved, is that a lot of people had some bad FireWire 400 products in the market. I mean, let's be honest, Apple was one of them, where the motherboards were not well protected against transients. When you hooked up the device, boom, there goes the motherboard.
And because people don't really realize this, but even a small volt, whenever electricity jumps through the air, it increases the voltage, dramatically.
Yeah,
and that can cause
thousands of volts.
Yeah, and that can, I forget the voltage that it's huge. What's the voltage? But it's enormous. But it'll create an enormous shock to both devices.
Yeah, and Apple was silently replacing or repairing lots of motherboards, and when users were getting the motherboard back, they would find that it had mysterious new parts and wires hooked onto it, and then the FireWire port started to work correctly. So Apple kind of quietly acknowledged that they had a problem. They fixed the design, and, of course, no one has that kind of problem with new Apple product.
So is there a certain way that you're supposed to plug, unplug, dismount drives? What's the correct procedure for doing this?
Okay. The correct procedure, once again, things have gotten a little bit easier. But let's just talk, first of all, with an external storage device that's FireWire-powered and portable. You plug in the FireWire cable to the host. You make sure the unit is turned off. You plug in the FireWire cable to the product. Then you power it up. Don't ever power it. Don't get it out of sequence. For instance, if you have it powered up and then plug it into the host, then you get that surge that comes down the line, which can cause problems. So just do it, plug in the cable, plug in the other end of the cable, then turn the power on, and you'll do it correctly.
So effectively, but would you, when some devices, they have the little, they don't have an on and off switch. They have just that little multi-pin connector.
True.
Are you going to worry about any kind of grounding, like if there's any static electricity built up on one side and then plugging in the cable,
if
the device isn't grounded?
Yeah. Now, if the device isn't doesn't have a power switch, and we've sold some products that don't have power switches, heck, we sell them right now. Just make sure that you've got yourself discharged before you plug in the device. One of the things you just don't want to do is discharge your static electricity through your product, through your FireWire cable, and then into your computer. It shouldn't cause a problem, but why take the risk?
Hey, James, hold on one sec. We're coming to a break. When we come back, I want to let everybody know how they can get a hold of WeebyTech and check out all the cool stuff you guys are up to.
Okay.
You're here with James Wiebe, the CEO of WeebyTech. You're listening to the Inside Mac radio program. We've been talking about FireWire stuff and best practices on your Mac for hooking and, you know, unhooking portable storage. You're listening to the Inside Mac radio program. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to unleash the power of DVD? With DVD XDV, the power is within your grasp. DVD XDV converts your DVDs into broadcast quality video. Video clips from DVD XDV are ready to use in iMovie, iDVD, or Final Cut Pro. To learn more, visit DVDXDV.com.
Inside your life,
business,
your home,
inside your world.
This is Inside Mac with Scott Shepherd.
With Scott Shepherd.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac radio program. This part of the Inside Mac radio show is brought to you by Printing for Less, the official printers of the Inside Mac radio program. If you need to have something printed, business cards, brochures, flyers, these guys are full ink on paper, offset web printers. You can check them out at printingforless.com. We're here with James Wiebe, the CEO of Wiebe Tech. Now, James, you guys have all this cool stuff, FireWire enclosure, SATA stuff, SCSI, Ultra SCSI, forensic kits. How do people find out more information about what's going on with Wiebe Tech? And maybe where's the next show you guys are going to be at where actually someone can come and see and touch the stuff in person?
Sure. The way to get us, the best way always, is the web, www.wiebetech, that's spelled WIEBETECH.com. And we will be at January Macworld. We're also at a lot of small forensic shows, but I don't think people really would care too much about those.
Oh, that's where all the black ops and the helicopter guys are there.
You betcha. And guys with crew cuts who look mean.
Oh, no. Okay, so we can go to the website, all that stuff there. You guys actually have the white paper there for the FireWire stuff, the best practices on how to deal with that.
Yeah, you go to media and then white papers, and there's about six white papers posted there on FireWire, a couple on FireWire that are interesting, and a few others that people might find interesting as well.
Cool stuff. James, thanks so much for joining us today, buddy. We really appreciate it. We'd like to have you guys back on more talking about all this new SCSI stuff you guys got coming up.
My pleasure. I'd love to do it.
Cool. There you go.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah, bye-bye.
The man there on enclosures and hard drives and forensics and black ops and black helicopters and
yeah
guys with M16s coming for your hard drive.
Yeah, I'm sure when they find a drive somewhere in the Middle East, you know, they call this guy. They use the software to get everything off of it.
Well, I'm sure it's a pretty good market. I mean, there's a lot of law enforcement agencies. There's bad, stupid, nasty people in every quadrant of every city and every police, law enforcement, sheriff.
Oh, yeah.
Public, whatever. Everybody needs one of these forensic kits, so
yeah,
it's probably a pretty cool gig.
Oh yeah, no, it's very nice. I mean, I just didn't know some of the stuff about it just doesn't occur to you about like static buildup, discharge, or zapping your motherboard by just plugging in a cable. But it is very, very possible to do. I think that's very important safety, because one of the things that happens is that with a motherboard with a computer, something doesn't always go wrong all at once. It just slowly may build up over time. You may zap it and never know anything's wrong with your system. And then you come back to it and something just starts acting weird. And it'll just slowly decay. There's not necessarily a point where the electronics will fail altogether, but it'll just fail gradually over time.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. I mean, but, you know, at least if you have a Power Mac G3 or G4 or G5, you can buy a FireWire card. and just plug it in for $1,500.
Yeah.
And you have to replace the whole motherboard if something does happen.
Well, actually, the problem is with electricity is it always tries to make the path of least resistance back to the ground, and that may be that may travel different paths depending upon how the card is grounded and whatnot. So definitely as a word of caution, follow good static electricity discharge methods when dealing with these drives. And like you're saying, keep them grounded. Keep them with an on and off switch if at all possible. And that looks like a good way to go.
Yeah, it's cool stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And all this new SATA stuff. And
oh, yeah. I think this is really interesting. I mean, SATA is just taking off. And, you know, over the next couple of years, we're going to see a lot of interesting products come, you know, a lot of different storage options. I mean, it's not just all about fiber channel and buying, you know, ultra expensive gear. It's going to be accessible to everybody, you know. It's going to be a democratization of mass storage.
And I've been using, you've been using the same thing I have, is this new enclosures and interface cards we have for our PowerBooks.
Yeah.
They rock.
They do rock. They are awesome.
Yeah,
they are very, very cool.
ATA
serial
fast.
ATA cards. Yeah, the new, I've got the new MacBook Pro card, and that's just wonderful.
Right, from SiriTech, the SiriTech card.
Yeah.
From FirmTech.
FirmTech. Oh, it's great. Great
stuff.
Yeah,
I think they even OEM a lot of stuff to Weeby Tech and Sonnet and all these other guys. So
yep.
When you get all these cool cards from the other guys, it's really a FirmTech one. But
yeah, they do a nice, thorough job on their products.
Good drivers. Cool stuff. Hey, you're listening to the Inside Mac Radio program. Next up, Google Earth. We'll be right back.
Thanks for calling. This is Tom. I'm not in right now. In fact, I'll be out most of the day. I need to go to the computer repair shop. My Mac crashed big time. There I was working on the final version of the annual report when, boom, I crashed. I am so dead. No backup, no vacation, no job. Life sucks.
Hey, Tom, this is Rich, your neighbor. Sorry to hear about your computer crash. Too bad you weren't using Tech Tool Pro. It could have fixed your drive and recovered your files in a few minutes. Go check it out at www.micromat.com. So anyway, I'm calling about some crazy kid that just drove his car through your side fence. There's a 67 Chevy sitting at the bottom of your pool. Take care.
Informal. Informative.
In front of the industry.
Inside Mac is on. Call Scott now at 800-490-0058 or email us at radio@insidemac.com. Inside Mac.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac Radio program. This part of the Inside Mac Radio show is brought to you by the digital production buzz of Philip Hodges. You can check that out Thursday evening, 6 to 7 p.m. on the web at digitalproductionbuzz.com. Right now we're joined by Chaiki Okazama. He's the product manager for Google Earth. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. So give our listeners a little background. What is Google Earth? It sounds like a cool thing, but maybe not everybody knows, really.
Yeah, so Google Earth is sort of this sort of 3D mapping application that allows you to sort of fly around the world like Superman and go all the way from outer space down to your driveway and roam around, see your neighborhood, see where you grew up, and all kinds of things around Earth.
This is such a cool program. I mean, this must be the number one time waster at Google.
A lot of people spend a lot of time on it. I mean, finding all kinds of stuff. Pretty amazing what people find.
Yeah, I got this running on my computer right here, and I just tell everybody to look up. You know, Scott, just look up right now and wave. It's like you can just look up and wave at the satellite as we're going over. We're looking right down on San Francisco. It's cool.
It is really amazing. How often are the images updated on Google Earth? These are all acquired satellite images?
Yeah, they're from a different range of sources, from satellite images to aerial images that are taking over, you know, different parts of the world in Europe and also, you know, in the U.S. and stuff like that. So the age are usually probably around 18 months or so, but it varies depending on what part of the world you look at.
Wow. Yeah, this is just amazing how you can actually zoom in from outer space and just go right into wherever, right to Google headquarters.
Yep, yep.
All the way down to the parking lot to see who's there today. Well, not today, but. So what was the whole thought process behind of creating this application, Google Earth? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of applications this can be used for real estate, for development, for planning. But what's the whole thought process when you guys actually came up with this whole deal?
Basically, it came from a company called Keyhole, which was a company that Google acquired back in 2004. And that technology developed sort of to bring sort of the GIS information, GIS sort of technology, which used to be only for a small group of professionals who were really well trained, and bring it to the masses so everybody can actually use it and see it, so that anybody from, you know, yourself to your grandmother, anybody could have access to this wonderful, amazing data that helps users sort of understand and sort of look at the world in a different way and get a sense of where things are and how, you know, some event takes place in the context it takes place in.
Now, as I understand it, people can actually tie into the system. It's an open system, so you can actually display things like, you know, relevant restaurants and things like that. Is that true?
Yeah, so we have the way to sort of what's called KML, which is sort of like the language that people use, or the API people use to sort of put their content into Google Earth. So you have stuff ranging from people sort of pointing out different like crop circles in UK to people showing, uploading their GPS tracks and showing where they skied one day or where they went paragliding or something like that. So it's amazing how diverse type of information and type of sort of KML files people have created and shown on Google Earth.
This is nice. I can see this just giving you a great new whole new appreciation for geography.
Yeah,
new way to find your way around an unknown place. It's really great. What kind of the things of features have you added just recently to this product?
Yeah, so with the recent release of Google Earth 4, one of the things we did was the ability to put textures on buildings. So basically, before they had 3D models that you could load into Google Earth. But you can basically just, you know, normal, just one color shaded polygons. But now you can actually paste pictures on that and make it more realistic. So you can see, like, the Eiffel Tower or something like that look more real than it did before, some of the buildings or whatever objects. Also, there's the ability to add, you know, much, much bigger images into Google Earth. And so if you had, for example, if you go to the earth.google.com website, there's a KML link that shows you the topographic maps of the entire Yosemite Valley. So before, you could only see one small section of that. With the new KML editions, you can actually see a much larger image than before. And also, that with that release, they came out with a whole brand new imagery database where we actually have now like a third of the world population covered with high-resolution imagery, plus I mean about 20% of the land surface, and just a massive, massive update to the imagery.
Now, where do you get all of the satellite information? I mean, how does it get updated? Does it come from the government? Does it come from third-party sources? Or
One big source is Digital Globe, which is a commercial satellite company, and they provide a lot of our satellite imagery. But we also have like the 6-inch, you know, data we have of like different areas like, you know, Paris and, you know, places around the U.S. Those come from different aerial companies that provide us the data.
Now, what kind of things are you talking about adding on into the final release of 4 or maybe beyond? I mean, what's pretty hot that sounds like a, you know, hot area for this type of application?
I think one of the key things is to give more power to the developers and the users so they can create and continue to create what they've already done in terms of the very, very rich content and just make it so they can do even more with that. I think what you'll be able to see is just take the world now and make it more, you know, more real, more realistic, and more richer, and more information, and just giving, you know, people ability to sort of browse, you know, information from a geographical context.
Yeah, that's really nice. Would I ever be able to get real time data in here? Like maybe I'd be watching a yacht race, you know, or something in real time, possibly.
There have been examples that other people, our users, have done amazing stuff from taking webcams and pointing them. Like they have some of downtown New York, and they've, you know, sort of overlaid that into Google Earth. You mentioned like right now there's a Volvo boat race that just happened recently, ended up, and I think they finished up somewhere in, I think either somewhere in the around Norway or something like that. But they just went through and they showed the current position of, you know, the boat race and which boat was going on, the Volvo boat race. And I think they're also somewhat doing the same thing recently also with the Tour de France, showing where the race is going. So there's a lot of different ways in which you can, you know, get that information out to people so that people can sort of follow their favorite sports event or different things.
Yeah, that would be a whole nice new way of watching races, you know, like bike races or things that go, or yacht races that go across large land masses.
Yep.
Because you could watch the whole thing going in real time, get a whole new impression. You know, maybe some days just follow along like a camera as these bicycles are going through the mountains and stuff would be, that'd be my dream project there.
So let's talk about the application. You actually have, this is available for Mac OS X.
And we released the Mac version. I guess the first initial one was in early this year, around January. And with this latest Google Earth 4 release, we now have a universal binary that you can have, so it runs natively both on the PowerPC and Intel chips. And also, we have the Google Earth Plus and Pro in the current beta version of Google Earth 4, which allows, you know, Mac users to access even more of the functionality that Google Earth can provide. So.
Yeah, this is great stuff. Now, what other app? What other platforms is Google Earth available on? Is it just for the Mac and the PC, or is it available on Linux? Or
it's also available on Linux. This recent release of Google 4 actually has like all three now: Linux, you know, Mac, PC, and they all run on all of them natively. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, this is great, and it's amazing. This is free.
Yeah, this is but it's definitely amazing. It's been pretty cool to see like what people have done with that and how much Google Earth sort of grown in that community and seeing that sort of being used in ways that we never even imagined. From some guy who took all the locations within Shakespeare's work and say, here's where all the different parts of the story happen. So something like literature, which you don't normally associate with geography, now has something like a KML file that can show like places on Earth and just amazing how what people users can do, and giving them that ability and the API just opens up a world that we could never imagine.
Now, I'm not the best familiar with this at this point, but is it possible to tie it into a GPS system so that, like, my waypoints, if I had GPS, it would actually update as I'm kind of going down the road, I could see the satellite, you know, tracking and whatnot?
I'm not sure you can do that exactly, but you can definitely import your waypoints in. So some guy who I mentioned before, paragliding, you actually see how he took a thermal and went up and circled up and went up in this, you know, and then went down a mountainside and where he landed. You can actually see the entire track. So you can do all kind of, or some guy went skiing and you can see him like he went down the mountain and which, you know, runs you did and where you stopped off for lunch, and you know, it's pretty cool.
Oh, that's nice. So this map is actually could be tied in. I mean, there's actual GPS, or that's probably not the right word, but there's actually exact geographical markers that could be tied into other systems.
Yeah, you can import all kinds of data into it, so you can actually see that within the context of all the imagery and all the roads and everything else that Google Earth provides.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Now, how would people get more information on Google Earth? If you're a developer and you want to make some cool stuff to work with Google Earth, where's the stuff located on your website, and how do they get a hold of you guys?
The main website is earth.google.com, and that's where you know you can download the application and learn more about it. The KML site, I think, is on code.google.com, and there's a link off of that that tells you where the KML documents are.
Wow, that's great stuff. Hey, I really appreciate you joining us with us today.
No problem.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, this is great stuff. We'll have you guys back because there's so much stuff to talk about what's going on with Google, and you guys, this is just incredible. This Google Earth is great.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks very much.
I can't believe this app is so cool.
I know.
You can waste hours with this thing. But it's not really a waste of time, but it's just so informative. It's such a cool app. You know what these guys did? The guys from Logitech that make that new look, the
new
controller.
Look. Yeah, they have
a new look and fly around like Superman with Google Earth.
Yes.
Isn't that cool stuff?
It's very great. It's awesome.
Yeah, hey, I'd like to thank Chaiki Okazama. He is the product manager for Google Earth, and that was great stuff. You're listening to the Inside Mac Show. We'll be right back.
If you think all batteries are the same, listen to this. When Bon Jovi goes on stage anywhere in the world, the battery that powers their wireless microphones is always a Duracell. So whether it's 50,000 fans or just you and your CD player, it just has to work. Duracell. Trusted everywhere.
Coast to coast and around the world, Scott Shepherd is Inside Mac.
Welcome back to the Inside Mac radio program. This part of the Inside Mac radio show is brought to you by OSX FAQ. If you want all the information that you need for the Macintosh, news from Mac Minute, software updates from Mac Update, all the cool stuff going on with the Apple Developer Connection, Unix tips and tricks, Mac OS 10 tips, you name it, it's all there. You can check it out at osxfaq.com. Google Earth, man, the thing rocks.
Oh, it's just amazing. I mean, where this can go, it's just there's so many things you could do with this thing. I mean, just to, if you drop into an area, if you're traveling, find out where everything is, you know, where you want to, heck, you could fly through the Yosemite Valley with the newer version and find out where all the good places to hike are, or to see them from different angles. It's amazing.
Well, the thing is you get these KML files. It's unbelievable on what you can download and see where stuff is.
Yeah.
The top 500 hotels in the country.
Mm-hmm.
USGS earthquake data.
Yeah. Just everything. I mean, there's
Placeopedia, links on the map on cool things, and it points out stuff, and there's actually rendering files to add these KML files to, like, render and shade buildings, and it's just
crazy. I mean, being a regular flat map, I mean, this is a map you can actually tilt horizontal and look across, go up and down and look across the horizon and change the angle and spin around. I mean, it's really nice. Really an amazing product. I mean, we'll have to see where it's going. Google is an incredible company. I mean, they're going really deep into technology and building lots and lots of R&D and spending lots of money on hiring all the right people. Kind of the reverse of somebody in Redmond, Washington, but that's another story. And they're just doing a great job. I mean, they're really on the ball, and I think there's going to be a lot of good things coming from Google going forward, technology-wise. I mean, they have a lot to offer. There are a lot of ways similar to Apple. Oh, this is not really quite a Mac story, pertain, but I mean, I think they're doing things all the right ways.
Now I can see why they bought SketchUp, the 3D cats,
mm-hmm.
to add the SketchUp technology in Google Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yep.
Crazy.
Yep. Oh, crazy. It's awesome.
Yeah, those guys are, like you said, they're really on the bleeding edge. They got some cool stuff. They're not just a search engine deal.
Yeah.
Much larger company.
Yeah, well, they're not staying put. I mean, they're not just saying, oh, yeah, we do this one good thing, and we'll just fire everybody, and we'll just hire up salespeople, and we'll just, forget it and cut costs and try to make as big a fat profit as possible. They're really forward looking. They're really looking for the best people and paying good salaries and just going after them. They're great. So
yeah.
But we had a good show today.
We had a great show. We had Philip Hodges on doing the post production news. We had Andy Shallot doing his little flash tip there for designers. Sam Levin with his cool Mac picks. Rich Tozzoli on. Guitar Center Masterclass, author of books, Pro Tools HD 5.1 Surround King.
Yeah.
Doing stuff for the Boston Pops and public television, all kinds of shows doing 5.1 surround mixes for TVs, DVDs, all kinds of great stuff.
And then, of course, not on, not on the studio of millions of dollars worth of equipment. But
no,
just
the guy's got a, for his home thing, I think he's got a 002R.
Yeah.
And, you can get in the whole gig, like we said, $3,000 or $4,000, you can do 5.1. Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
Or you can get an Icon and spend $100,000 and get an Icon system with an HD Excel and racks and tons full of gear and this beautiful monster console with 3D, joystick pan controls and just go crazy.
Yeah, but then you can't, edit your surround sound on the beach or something, where you'd like to just take your MacBook and your old W02R and maybe a long extension cable or a large battery, big, giant car battery to power everything with you. But just getting out, sometimes just getting out into a smaller environment is a good way to learn and do things differently. So it's quite
so
cool.
True.
Yeah.
Great stuff there. Then in the second hour here, we just had James Wiebetek on talking about all kinds of cool things about storage technology and forensic stuff and all the great things going on with the whole portable storage market for the Mac and how to do things right with the FireWire and a lot of good information there.
Yeah, I think that's especially to, practice good safety with cables. Don't zap your Mac. Don't zap your drives because that's where everything is, Always back things up, of course. But very cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, cool stuff. And then, of course, we just had Google on.
Yeah.
Talking about Google Earth.
I think I'll spend the rest of the day just playing with Google Earth. This is cool.
That's like a game almost. It's so cool. I can see this thing eating up just
hours,
days and days. I don't know, it's just a great thing, and it's just so cool. It's on the Mac and all the great things you can add in the KML files and pretty neat stuff. If you haven't got it, you guys really need to go out and get Google Earth.
Yeah.
earth.google.com. Cool.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff. And hey, the sponsors of the Inside Mac radio program, Micromat, DVD, XDV, MCE Technologies, and our media partners, the Popular Photography and Imaging Magazine, American Photo Magazine, Creative Pro, Mac Update, Printing for Less, the official printers of the Inside Mac radio show, and the digital production buzz of Philip Hodges. You can find out more information about what we're up to and the daily Inside Mac Minute Daily News with Dino Orlando and all the great stuff going on there. You can go to www.insidemacradio.com. I've been Scott Shepard. He's been Brad Wright. And we had just more cool stuff about your Mac.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of great stuff lined up next week, and we'll talk to you all then.